Good afternoon. It's a little bit after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Friday, the 22nd of June, the day after Midsummer's. This afternoon on a Juno afternoon, we are going... This afternoon, here on a Juno afternoon, we've got some great guests, so I'm so glad you're going to be able to listen. St. Vincent de Paul, C-SPAN, is here talking about its 50 Capitals tour. KTOO's 28-hour end-of-the-fiscal-year member drive, and Woosh Kinadi will be here with the Summer Showcase Poetry Slam. Also, COAST, the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, doing some beach walkers training in Gustavus. That's all here on a Juno afternoon, so stay tuned after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. Wisconsin's 11 tribes and the State Department of Public Instruction have been working on agreements to improve communication and educational outcomes for tribal youth. Wisconsin Public Radio's Danielle Kading reports.
The Lac-Di-Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa is the first tribe to reach an agreement with the state. Lac-Di-Flambeau Tribal Education Department Director Ashley Mackey says the goal is to improve communication and coordination of programs for tribal kids.
The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction commits to providing ongoing cultural responsiveness training to all of its staff to ensure improved communication, service, and understanding, and working with the Lac-Di-Flambeau tribe in serving our students.
State Schools Superintendent Tony Evers says the agreement furthers their commitment to educate kids about the state's tribal nations under Wisconsin law.
It's more about recognition of the sovereignty, individual sovereignty of each nation. And not only recognizing that, but identifying ways that we can help American Indian kids achieve at higher levels.
The tribe and DPI signed the agreement in May. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading in Wisconsin.
In Utah, a Navajo man who was disqualified from a county commission race last month has filed a lawsuit to be reinstated on the ballot. The Salt Lake Tribune and Associated Press report officials with San Juan County argued Willie Gray Eyes doesn't live in Utah, a claim he denies. Attorneys for Gray Eyes say the move was motivated by his race and his political views. Gray Eyes, a Democrat, serves on the board of a group that supported the creation of Bears Ears National Monument, which was opposed by Republican leaders in San Juan County. Alaska Native subsistence fishing officials are advocating for shared resource management with federal and state wildlife officials. That was one of the messages from a U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs oversight hearing this week. The hearing collected testimony to explore ways federal, state, and tribal officials can work together for sustainable fish and game resource management. Mary Sattler Peltola, executive director of the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, told the committee she expects the Chinook salmon harvest this year on her river to be just 16,000 fish. That's down from an average of 96,000.
My belief is that we should not be called to join the table and become managers only in times of crisis, when things are this bad. My preference is that we be asked to participate and be managers even in times of abundance.
Federal law makes allowances for subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska, but it frequently conflicts with state laws. Committee Chair John Hoven said tribes have long demonstrated effective conservation practices, and the federal government should work toward viable subsistence policies for all tribal communities. Several Democrats are calling for an investigation of Department of Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke after reports he used official resources for financial gain. Politico reported this week a development group funded by the chairman of Halliburton is planning a commercial project that would substantially increase the value of property Zinke owns in his hometown of Whitefish, Montana. Democrats on the House Natural Resources Committee also say Zinke met with Montana property developers in his secretary office. And an Anishinaabe artist in Canada has created a turtle emoji that Twitter users can activate in honor of Indigenous History Month by using special hashtags during June, like Indigenous Peoples Day and Indigenous History Month. The CBC reports Nancy King, who goes by the name Chief Ladybird, is from Rama First Nation and Moose Deer Point First Nation. The turtle represents Turtle Island, the North American continent. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by New Mexico Community Capital, helping make the impossible possible with tools for success for emerging Native American enterprises, including microlending available for early-stage Native-owned businesses. Information at neirprogram.org.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And it's about 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Friday, the 22nd of June. This is a Juneau Afternoon. We have a number of great guests today, but first and foremost, we have two representatives of St. Vincent de Paul, and generally a very good organization that does great work, but they've got some specific news about an exciting new development. So Maureen Hall and Dan Austin, welcome to a Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you, Ben.
Hi, Ben. Thank you.
And let's just go ahead and not tease our listeners too much. What is the exciting new news for St. Vincent?
Well, we, after many, many years of thinking about it and planning for it, St. Vincent's will be opening a new thrift store on the former Valley Auto Parts store. And that will be, the soft opening will be on the 5th of July.
Wow. And so this is a long time. How long has the thrift store been at the current location?
The current location, we've been there for 24 years, and it was in existence for 4 or 5 years before that, so it's almost 30 years old itself.
That's a big legacy to be leaving behind, but we were talking a little bit before we went on the air. There's still a number. How many residential units are there in the residential compound?
Well, in the shelter itself, we have 25 units for homeless families, individuals, seniors, and we also have 7 permanent supportive housing units that are totally handicapped accessible, universal design on the first floor.
And so will the move of the thrift shop, the retail shop, to a new location open up some more space for more housing?
For the future, it will, although probably for the near future, it's going to be mostly dedicated to the existing tenants who have never had adequate space for birthday parties, gatherings, meetings, and that sort of thing. So we want to get some of that space back to their use.
And I'm sure they will all very much appreciate that. Actually, again, before we went on the air, I was mentioning I had been out there in a professional capacity once as an attorney and had to meet it wasn't really a conference room, but it was the best that we could do.
Right.
It was a kitchen, I think, actually.
Probably was one of our kitchens.
I think we were in the kitchen now that I'm remembering, yes, absolutely, which is better than meeting outside.
Yes.
So obviously most listeners are probably familiar with the thrift shop, but maybe they don't know what the revenues go to and what role that chunk of funding plays in your charity's operations.
Okay. So it's very important, though, to understand that, you know, St. Vincent de Paul is about $1.5 million organization. The thrift store comprises about 30% of it. But what's important is that the thrift store comprises the only portion of our revenues that is really discretionary, that we have the ability to spend on helping people in any way that they need help. So we provide everything from bus passes to medical assistance for life-saving operations and everything in between, food, clothing, shelter, all that we can. And the thrift store is the primary source. That and our donations is the primary source of that money.
Now, other thrift stores in town include Salvation Army. But Salvation Army, does it have a residential program?
I don't believe they do.
I don't think they do either. So St. Vincent really actually, you know, between Catholic Community Service and the Salvation Army, St. Vincent actually has a pretty big portfolio of services that you're offering.
Yes. And so the thrift store, one of the most important things the thrift store does, the revenues from the store, is it does support about 50% of the cost of our family shelter. In addition to that, we provide permanent, affordable, supportive housing at 6 different locations and under 5 different programs throughout Juneau. We have 132 households under our management and care.
That is a lot of people in a town this size.
That's a lot of people.
Tell us a little bit more about St. Vincent de Paul, the society larger, you know, what its place is within the firmament of the Catholic Church and all of that.
Well, about 200 years ago in France, a bunch of college kids started the first St. Vincent de Paul, and based upon the work of priest 400 years ago, Vincent himself, who dedicated his mission to serving those in need. And so these college kids, you know, they'd sit around and argue theology, and someone challenged them, well, show us what you do. And so that was when they started going into the slums of Paris, two by two, working with an order of nuns, the Daughters of Charity, to deliver, you know, firewood or food or, you know, just help in whatever way they could. And they so it's been going for the last 200 years, and it has now spread throughout the world. So.
And 200 years ago in France, Napoleon had been deposed a second time, and Louis-Philippe was put on the throne. There was a restoration,
had,
I think.
And we had the Paris communes.
Right. But so at that point, actually, the bourgeoisie had really a firm, permanent place in French society. And this is a lay society. So these were kids who could afford to be at school.
Yeah.
They were Sorbonne students.
Okay. And so, but they just didn't sit there, you know, drinking and going to the pub or whatever. They actually had debates about things and were forced into to putting their money where their mouth was.
That's yep. right.
What
That's
a
right.
neat story. I'd never really heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so at that time, there were quite a number of, quote, societies that developed in Paris, and some of them were willing to take up arms against the existing government, such as in the Paris communes. The people of St. Vincent de Paul, those students said, no, we're going to go the route of love.
Excellent. And so the society, is it active, obviously, in France and here in the United States, and I'm going to guess in many countries all around the world?
That's right. Yeah.
How exciting. Well, here in town, obviously, Dan, you're the general manager. Maureen, you're the president of the board of directors. What sort of opportunities exist for regular citizens of Juneau to get involved, other than, as I've done many times in the past, bringing things to donate to the thrift shop?
Yeah. Well, we've got our Walk for the Poor coming up the 22nd of September, so that is one of our major fundraisers to support our aid program. We're also going to be starting a home visit program, much the way the original conference was set up, going out two by two. Instead of people coming into us, we will go out to them. So if someone calls with a need, you know, go out and compassionately listen, hear their story, and try to connect them with services in our community, or if it's something we're able to help with ourselves. So that would be one way. Of course, volunteering in the thrift store.
That's a big way.
That is the big way, and that's a great way, you know, and it would be a wonderful thing, you know, if you're retired and you have a couple friends, instead of going and sitting and having coffee, you know, dedicate one morning a week to volunteering in the store, and you can socialize and serve those in need.
And it's not just running the cash register. It's sorting through donations, quality control, sizing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, checking to see if electronics work. You know, I suppose someone could take home a bag of mending, although we really discourage people from donating things that do need mending or washing. Or
donating yeah. electronics that don't work in the first
right.
place.
That's right. That's right.
And, of course, I'm sure that anyone listening who doesn't have time to do any of those things, St. Vincent de Paul also takes cash donations.
You bet.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Do you have a website that people could go to and learn a little bit more about everything?
Yes. Go to SVDP, Juneau.org.
Excellent. Well, anything else you would like to share with our listeners? Again, the soft opening of the new location is the 5th of July, and it's the Valley Auto Parts store.
Yeah, right there on the corner of Glacier Highway and the turn to the airport.
And the original store will still be open until the end of June, but not this weekend. This weekend is a moving weekend, but starting Monday, the original store will still be open until the end of the month.
Excellent. All right, well...
Oh, just one more thing, Ben, and donations, no donations until the 5th, and please bag them in small bags for the little old ladies who have to lift them.
Right, but don't bring stuff that has to be moved from point A to point B.
Right.
Save it for point B at this point.
Save it for point B.
All right, very good. So Dan and Maureen, thank you both very much. Keep up the wonderful work you do for our community, and best wishes for a great weekend.
Thank you,
Ben.
Thanks for listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Today's Friday, the 22nd of June. Ben Brown here. And Heath Niederer on the phone. Do I have you there, Heath?
You do. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And I'm sorry we didn't get to talk to you while you were still here in Juno, but you were here recently as part of the 50 Capitals bus tour for C-SPAN. And let me ask you, did you have a good time in Alaska's capital city?
We had a fantastic time. You guys rolled out the red carpet for us. We loved the community participation, and the weather was absolutely beautiful and stunning. So we heard that was sort of atypical for this time of year to get 2 or 3 days in a row. So we had an awesome time in your lovely city.
Very good. You were just here last week, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Actually, this week, Monday and Tuesday of this week.
Okay.
So,
okay,
good. We're cruising through. Yeah,
I was out of town actually till Monday night, and I was going to say it's only atypical when I'm in town. Whenever I leave town, it always gets to be 80 degrees and sunny, just like anywhere in the world, right? So,
right.
Where did you come? Where were you before you came here, and where are you now?
So, in mid-June, we ended in Chicago. We hightailed it to Bellingham, Washington, where last Friday, the bus hopped on the Alaska Marine Highway and made its way up to Juneau, and the crew flew into Juneau on Sunday. So we spent 2 days, as I mentioned, in your city. Then I guess today is Friday. On Wednesday, we hopped on the ferry and went to Haines, and from Haines, we made it to Fairbanks last night, and we're currently in Fairbanks at a Boys and Girls Club talking to students and educators about our programming and resources.
And now Fairbanks is known in Alaska for being hot and sunny in the summer, but they've had a pretty cold year this year. What's the weather like there today?
You know, it was a little rainy this morning, but that cleared up, and it is probably mid-70s, low 70s, and lightly overcast. So, again, another beautiful day for us.
Excellent. And so when you're not on a bus going to all 50 capitals for C-SPAN, where do you live?
So I reside in Annapolis, Maryland, which is outside Washington, D.C., and I'm C-SPAN is headquarters in Washington, D.C., so that is my normal routine. But any chance to go to Alaska, I'm going to take it for work. So we haven't been to your state with the bus program in a long time. It's been 22 years, so I'm happy to be here. And, again, everyone has welcomed us with open arms, and it's been just a wonderful reception. So we're very happy with the turnout so far.
Well, that's great. Well, you've made a very good impression on folks here. I was at the Juneau Chamber lunch yesterday, and people were giving Warren Russell, who's the GCI executive who helped arrange for your visit here, accolades and saying how great it was that they made sure that Alaska was part of the tour.
Yeah, and I want to give a shout-out and a huge thank you to GCI, because the brainchild behind the Capitals tour last September, our bus, which is currently traveling through your state, was designed, built, and launched. And we're celebrating 25 years of the bus program November 1st. So we said, what can we do within a 14-month period that can really bring awareness and attention to our, you know, our long-standing commitment to education and being in communities? And we kept coming back to the 50 Capitals tour. So we kicked it off with the first state, Dover, Delaware, and then fast forward to Alaska and Hawaii. So when we reached out to GCI about this, our visit a couple months ago, they were on board, super supportive, and given their local connections and their relationships with each of the folks in these communities, we were able to connect with the right folks to bring the bus to a variety of venues to talk to, again, students and educators and specifically engaged about what we do at C-SPAN. The only additional item I'll add, in addition to the community events, we're also doing substantial programming in each of the markets of Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. So all the stuff that we gather over the next 12-day trip will air July 21st and 22nd on C-SPAN networks, and it's called the Alaska Weekend.
21st and 22nd of July on the C-SPAN networks, and that is will that bump anything that's happening in the halls of Congress?
It will not. Weekends, I mean, I can't look ahead, but you know what? I heard that they're not going on their August recess, which they typically do. So, again, that might change as well, and that might have changed. But no, our weekend's dedicated. So we have Book TV on C-SPAN, too, so we're interviewing several local nonfiction authors, as I mentioned, throughout Alaska. We're also on American History TV. We're interviewing historians and public officials and talking to them about your industry and your and the culture, unique culture of each of these cities as well. So I encourage everyone to tune in. And if you miss it, you can always go to cspan.org. We've archived all our video going back to the mid-'80s, so there's 240,000 hours and growing every day. And there you can watch it as well.
You went right to where I was going to ask, which is what was the online presence, Heath? And, of course, I'll just give a shout-out. I love watching Prime Minister's Question Time on C-SPAN. It's just it gives you a perspective on a way they different democracies work than ours.
Yeah, I agree. And when we take this bus to a lot of middle and high school, we have a couple sections on our interactive app. So when you walk aboard the bus to your listeners, it's a mobile classroom. So we have 11 tablets where you can learn about our programming and resources. In the back, we have a presentation area, a selfie station, and also converts into a production studio. But two of the main clips that the students love are Prime Minister's Questions, right?
Yep.
And also we have a pop culture section as well, where it's like notable famous people that have been on C-SPAN over the years, you know, actors and sports figures. So they get a kick out of that as well.
Excellent. Well, you're doing great work, Heath, with C-SPAN, which is really a important part of the educational telecommunications firmament of our country. It certainly does a great deal to connect people with their government, and not just with government, which obviously you're proving with the tour you're on right now. So when you leave Alaska, where are you going to be headed?
Well, we're going to look at all the beautiful photos and video that we've taken from your state and enjoy that. And then we head down to California for the month of July. And early August, we get ready to make the trip to Hawaii. So we'll be there mid-August through late August. And then when we get back to the mainland, we'll conclude our tour ending in Albany, New York, end of October.
Outstanding. Well, Heath Niederer from C-SPAN, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us here on a Juno afternoon. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, just to everyone in Juno, thank you again for rolling out the red carpet for us. I mean, everyone that we spoke to was, very appreciative that we came. And, you know, it seemed like everyone knew everyone and the word got around. So we appreciate the support. And I encourage everyone to tune in July 21st and 22nd.
I am sure many of us will. Thank you again, Heath. Safe travels and keep up the good work.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, bye now.
This is Bird Note. To our ear, the haunting song of the hermit thrush is musical, even ethereal. To another hermit thrush, the song signals a male is laying claim to a territory and seeking a mate. Spend time around hermit thrushes in a mountain forest in summer, and you're also likely to hear them make other sounds, such as or hermit thrushes, like other songbirds, broadcast a variety of calls. Call notes can signal many things: alarm at a predator, or aggression toward a rival, or they may simply maintain contact between members of a pair or flock. Black-capped chickadees sing a plaintive, whistled song and make a call that gives the bird its name. The chickadee call serves different purposes in different contexts and is but one of a dozen in the bird's repertoire. American goldfinch males sing a bright, bubbly song and nearly always call in flight with a sweet four-syllable. Like to tell us what birds are singing and calling around your home? Find us at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
KTOO is on the air today, raising the final dollars needed to hit the membership goal for the year. We encourage you not to hold off in supporting the service you use every day. And remember, anyone who contributes $15 a month or more will get a special New York Times digital subscription. Support the best in public media and gain access to the best in print media. But you gotta act now, only 50 are left. Renew or start your membership at ktoo.org or at 586-3636. Thanks.
And it's about 27 minutes after the hour, this beautiful Friday, the 22nd of June. I'm Ben Brown. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. And our next guests are from Wooshkanady, here to talk about the Summer Showcase. Bill Merck, Mike Christensen, and Erica Bergeron, welcome to a Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And, you know, you could be outside frolicking in the semi-sunny conditions right now, but you're here to promote poetry slamming, and I love that about you.
Yes.
So tell our listeners, first of all, about what Wooshkanady is.
So Wooshkanady is a grassroots nonprofit based here in Juneau, Alaska. We put on an event every month, usually a slam and an open mic combined. But this month we have a showcase, which is our big fundraising event for the year. And Mike, do you want to talk about the showcase or?
Oh yeah, we have six poets, and they will be reading from their works, and Bill and I will be co-hosting the event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we found over the last year these very strong voices. We have six performers who'll be up on stage. Each set is going to be between 15 and 20 minutes, be accompanied by Jacob Picard, a local musician who you may be familiar with.
Yep.
He's worked with us for a couple of years now, and he just really, really takes the poems home. He really does an amazing job.
He does.
And now you said this is a fundraiser. So monetizing poetry, not everyone's been able to do that successfully down through the centuries. How are you making it work?
We've done pretty well for ourselves.
We do okay.
Yeah,
we do
Juneau
okay.
has been very forgiving for poets. Yeah, we do pretty well at the Summer Showcase. We usually pass around a hat, and we also sell merch. So we have sweatshirts, T-shirts, poetry posters that people really love. Yeah.
We should have some books. I think one of our poets is going to have her book available.
Yes, absolutely.
And by popular demand, I'm not.
Right. or you could just say they all sold out, Mike.
Yeah.
There's that. Yeah.
I would never accuse Mike of selling out. But. But yeah, we're really looking forward to it. This is our third showcase, I think.
Yes.
We've done. Maybe
no,
more than that.
This is our fifth showcase.
Is it five? This will be, the third one at Rockwell. We'll be upstairs in the ballroom.
Right. Okay.
Night.
Very good venue. And so of the six poets, are they all kind of seasoned professionals, or are they on different places on the spectrum of their artistic journey?
We have a mix.
Yeah, we do.
We have some people who are doing their first showcase, mm-hmm. and we have some people who may have been at all of them. So it's quite a variety of different voices, mm-hmm. and it's going to be very exciting.
Different styles, absolutely. Yeah. Different styles, different approaches to poetry.
And these are all their own original creations.
Well,
of the younger members, I'm thinking in the context of being the chair of the State Arts Council, you know, we are so pleased at the way Poetry Out Loud has helped young people appreciate poems, you know, historical great poems, and then edgier, newer ones that are still appropriate for a high school audience. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Poetry Out Loud now also has a component that encourages young people at high school to actually recite their own creations. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty new, you know, over the 13th year we're into Poetry Out Loud now. And I'm just wondering if there's been any sort of a theater pipeline from Poetry Out Loud in the Juneau School District into what you're doing with the slams and the original creation.
You know, actually, I know a little bit about that. So two of our performers are actually high school students. They're fairly young. And one of our performers actually teaches Poetry Out Loud, DJ Derego. So he teaches Poetry Out Loud in Juneau, and that's kind of our connection to that.
Right. Yeah, he's one of the coaches, and he helps mm-hmm. work with the young people who participate in Poetry Out Loud now. Outstanding.
Mm-hmm. He's also one of our performers tomorrow evening.
Excellent. So there's a hook. So, again, back to the details. You said it's at Rockwell tomorrow evening, but a little more context. What time can people get there? Will there be food and drink available? That sort of thing.
You can get there at 1 p.m., but the doors don't open until 7.
we'll be working our magic, transforming the ballroom.
Going to be
so if you want to help decorate, get there at 1, right. otherwise a little
right.
later. Okay?
We always welcome a couple of extra sets of hands. So.
Tickets are $20 for adults, $15 for youth, which is
12 and under.
12 and under. There's going to be no food because they've stopped serving food there, but there will be alcohol.
All right. Yeah. Deb told me, in fact, that she has kind of, you know, made the kitchen. It's laying fallow for the time being.
Yeah. I think she stepped back for a little bit, but there will be a bar upstairs. I would encourage people to, you know, come early, get a bite. Doors open at 7. We'll be there. We might be able to break the doors open a little bit sooner than that, just to make sure everybody gets a seat. Typically, these events at these events, we've had 150 people. So we really expect a good turnout. We've been on a lot of radio shows this week. Thank you very much. and we have posters up and lots of word of mouth. We have some tickets available. All the board members have tickets available. There will be tickets available at the door. You can pick them up at the Jack and at Hearthside as well.
Excellent. So. Okay, very good. Well, I want to. That's good to know. We're selling them across the street at the Jack box office because that's we want to be as accessible as possible for people. What time will the show wrap up tomorrow night? Approximately
9:15, something like that. It depends on how the poets go. There is, you know, we're giving them 15 to 20 minutes apiece. Some maybe a little bit shorter than that. Some might go on a little bit longer.
And it's how much gabbing those co-hosts
I was going to say
that's kind of the wild card there. So.
A talkative MC. I don't know what you're talking. I've never heard of such a thing.
Well,
it's a foreign concept.
So.
Yep. I don't even know what that would be like.
It could be twice as bad.
Exactly.
And we have a couple tricks up our sleeve. We're thinking we may have a couple of trivia questions and some prizes and that kind of thing. And,
well, one of the reasons I did ask about when it was wrapping up is, of course, tomorrow night there's a little bit of a race going on, fundraiser for a certain public broadcasting entity.
Yes.
So someone could, in theory, go and appreciate all this poetry and then trundle on down and still participate in Only Fools Run at Midnight.
Rip your clothes off, have your running gear underneath that, head out the door.
Like a super poet.
Yeah.
We would love to inspire someone to run at midnight.
Well, in a town like Juneau, it's practically impossible that someone's not going to be doing both events.
Absolutely.
That Venn diagram is already lapped in on itself.
And probably something else as well, the way Juneau goes.
Exactly. So is there a website where people can learn more about Woosh Kanaidi?
Our Facebook is actually the best place to find us. So that's Woosh Kanaidi, WOSHKIDEIYI.
If you just type in Woosh, we come right to the top of the list.
Yes. All right. So. That's good. That's a nice searchable thing without a Google ad placement.
Yes, definitely.
Good. Well, the Woosh Kanaidi, the summer showcase, tomorrow night at Rockwell. Tickets still available. It's a fundraiser to help more people appreciate and create poetry year-round here in Juneau. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any other words of wisdom you would like to share, or words of poetry you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, be careful what you ask for.
We have a little extra time, but yeah, that probably was a leading question.
I will say that people have asked us where the monies go that we raise, and typically we use that money for several things. We put together, we promote events. We have a writing workshop that we typically do every August, where we have an overnight venue. We rent a B&B and have people come out and just, you know, bond and write and just kind of brainstorm. And then we have new shirts created every year, every season. This is season 7 for us, so we'll have a new season starting in October. And paying for venues, we have to pay Jacob, our musician, you know, all those things. So that's where the money goes, in case people are asking.
Yeah. And people do like to know where the money goes.
They do.
Yes.
And, of course, we like to thank them for being the place where the money came from.
Absolutely. We'll be doing that. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Bill Merck, Mike Christensen, Erica Bergman, thank you all for sponsoring Woosh Kanaidi and for the Summer Showcase and for being here on a Juneau afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks
for the opportunity.
There's something you should know about Saturday, June 30th. That's the day we need everyone, including you, we hope, to have made their annual or additional gift to the station. Why June 30th? That's the final day of our fiscal year, when all of our commitments to creating and broadcasting great programming need to be met with the financial support from people like you who depend on it. That's why today we're asking you to make sure your membership is up to date. Give at ktoo.org.
And it is 39, almost 40 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon this Friday, the 22nd of June. That was Ocarina and a very well-known tune, Quizás, Quizás. We listened to Mystical Force from the same album earlier. I wish I could tell you more about it, but all the information in the liner notes is in Chinese, and my Mandarin kanji skills are just not up to really being able to do a lot with that. I did want to mention the weather, which is partly sunny right now, a high in the mid-60s with some light winds. Tonight's supposed to be mostly cloudy with low around 50 and light winds continuing. And in the valley, it's going to be a little colder, low in the mid-40s. Tomorrow, on Saturday, it's going to be mostly sunny with a high around 60 degrees and southwest winds to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clouding up again a low around 50 and 40 out in the valley. And a chance of rain, but only a chance on Sunday with some light winds. So pretty good summer weather as we head into the weekend for Midsummers. Tonight is a great opportunity to go to a summer block party over in the Jack. We're going to be presenting some performers from the Juno Fine Arts Camp and also some of their visual arts. And there will be a beer garden and a lot of other fun things going on. And that's, of course, over at the Jack, the second summer block party of 2018. And a great way to support the Jack, building the new Jack, and have a good time seeing folks that you want to hang out with.
KTOO.org is where you can go right now to support the programming you depend on every day. Between now and Saturday morning at 10 a.m., we'll be here raising the final funds needed to close out the year. What can you do? Make sure the station you love and rely on every day is funded. Join with the thousands of other individuals around Juno that help make KTOO the best in community broadcasting. Make your contribution at KTOO.org. When you make a contribution this month to KTOO, here's how we will and won't use your gift. We'll use it to support independent reporting on all things that matter to us here in Juno. We'll use it to deliver NPR coverage from all around the world. We won't ever use a single dollar of your contribution for rumors, sensational innuendo, or fake facts. But we expect you already know that. It's likely why you're a listener. Make sure you're also a member. Give as generously as you can at KTOO.org.
And it's about 45 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. And with me now on the phone is Julia Parrish from the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team. Julia, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Ben.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us on a Juno Afternoon. You are somewhere in the state of Washington?
I am in cloudy Seattle.
Oh, goodness. I was actually flying through there the other day, and it was kind of hot, but it's reverted to more stereotypical weather?
Yeah, well, once we got to the first day of summer, it went down back to 68. Yeah.
Very good. All right, so location notwithstanding, we are very grateful to have you here talking to the good people of Juno. And tell us a little bit more about COAST with two S's, the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So COAST is a citizen science project, and it's run out of the University of Washington here in Seattle. It's about 20 years old, and in COAST, people sign up to do one of two things, either walk beaches monthly, and they're looking for dead birds, literally birds that have washed in on the tide, or we also have a marine debris program. But in fact, what we're focusing in on at Gustavus on Thursday, June 28th, and Friday, the 29th, is our beach bird module. So we're welcoming folks to come in and participate and learn how to identify birds.
And this is a volunteer opportunity, but there must be some training involved.
Oh, yes. But, you know, actually not as much as you would think. So people tell you that it takes actually a pretty long time to be able to identify live birds. And, you know, that's because it's hard to get close to them, and you have to buy binoculars, and you have to remember what they sound like and all that stuff. And that's kind of the fun thing about dead birds. You can just walk right up to them on the beach. You don't have to sneak up to them at all. And we have a field guide to dead birds, kind of like the roadkill guide to flattened fauna, except actually serious. So we train people in about, our training's about 5 hours. So in about 5 hours, we can teach you or anybody, birder or not, how to identify, maybe about 80 species, super high accuracy, 75-80% accuracy out of the gate, just in one training session.
That's a pretty impressive thing because, you know, we all see birds, we like them, but to know what they are, especially when you can't get close to them, that's a really a valuable skill. But in addition to the fun of learning how to be a better birder, what sort of data are you collecting that actually has scientific use that's going to help make the world a better place?
Yeah, that's a super important question. Well, as you and your listeners know, there have been just tons and tons of changes in the marine environment in Alaska over the last few years. Certainly people will remember the year when we had common MERS, those mid-sized penguin-looking birds, just littering beaches from southeast all the way on up into the Bering and out the Aleutian Chain. That was a mortality event where we estimate at least 500,000 MERS lost their lives, and those birds were starving to death. So they were, as live birds, coming in very, very close to shore looking for food, and they just weren't able to find enough to survive. And that whole event was forced by changes in ocean temperature, which many people refer to as the blob. So we had a big, big change in the ocean environment, and that had pretty massive consequences for a lot of seabirds, especially in Alaska. And so being a participant in COAST helps us bound those mortality events. And then more basically, and maybe in a sense more importantly, it helps us create a baseline. So when things are not going cattywampus, we can figure out what's normal. What do we normally expect at this time of year in this location? And, you know, once you have a baseline, then you can measure how far away we go from normal when big changes like the blob come along.
And speaking of normal, has the common MER population rebounded from that catastrophic die-off?
That is a super good question. So in the breeding season before that die-off and also following it, we had pretty big colony failures throughout the Gulf and up into the Bering Sea. And we are just on pins and needles waiting to see what's going to happen this season. So we don't know yet. The jury is actually still out about whether that population is going to rebound and do well. But what I can tell you is we are witnessing an unusual mortality event linked to no birds on the colonies up in the northern Bering and Chukchi right now. In fact, I'm getting emails about it even today as we speak. So it's not over for seabirds in Alaska.
Well, of course, the process of climate change has hardly stabilized, and it's also a million different things. You know, you can decide, okay, maybe this temperature is having this effect on this food source, but then who knows what else has changed in terms of nitrogen levels or something. So you really could never have too much data to try to figure out what's going on and try to prevent bad things from happening.
That is true. And I'm a scientist, so I love data. But I have to say that one great thing, I mean, it's just fantastic thing about citizen science is that there are not tens, but hundreds and hundreds, even 1,000 people out there collecting information. So without those eyes and ears and that patient observation on all of those beaches that are, you know, next to where you live, or maybe you met your partner there, you take your dog for a walk there, they're places that are meaningful to you. Without those eyes and ears, we wouldn't have that data. We wouldn't have the scientific information that we do. So citizen science in that regard, it's a marriage between local, coastal community members and scientists at universities like this one.
Right. It's analogous to, certainly not the same as indigenous knowledge, but it's still just the knowledge of human experience, which is a great base level upon which you can build with the more refined scientific data that you're collecting.
That's exactly right. So we would think of coast as more of the local knowledge type of knowledge, and it's just funneled through a particular kind of science observation. But it's a really good point that you raise with indigenous knowledge, because in fact, those knowledge bases go back for many thousands of years, and so we can also use that very rich and deep knowledge of the environment to get a sense of what have things been like, what is normal in the extremely long term. So COAST is a long-term citizen science project, but it's only 20 years old. We can't hold a candle to the tribal communities on that.
Exactly. So this is going to take place in Gustavus, and when are the training opportunities for people who may want to get involved before the day of?
Good question. So we have a refresher training on Thursday, June 28th, and that's for folks who are already participating in the program. There are a few folks there in Gustavus who want to come and just hone their skills. We bring parts of birds, some beautiful wings with us to practice on. And then Friday the 29th, also at Gustavus Public Library, starting at 3 p.m., 3 to 7 is when we're welcoming new participants coming in. So you can sign up for that training by going to the COAST website, COAST again with two S's, as you mentioned, or just emailing info@coast.org.
Well, this is really an opportunity, and if you don't live in Gustavus, you could still go to Gustavus in time to do it.
Yes, you can.
All right, very good. So Julia Parrish, the Executive Director of COAST, the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, and you are also, I didn't mention this initially, the Associate Dean of the University of Washington's College of the Environment and a professor there as well.
I'm all of those things.
Of the above. But for this time of the year, you're going to be out on the beach looking at birds, figuring out what's going on in our natural world.
Absolutely.
Well, Julia Parrish, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon?
Well, all I can say is if you can't come join us, please let us know. We're happy to come back to Southeast and into the Gulf, some of our favorite places to be.
All right. Thank you very much, Julia Parrish. I hope you have a great turnout and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Ben.
Bye.
KTOO is more than just what you hear on the radio. KTOO.org lets you listen to KTOO's live stream along with on-demand content wherever you go. These digital services are free for you, but they cost us more money each year. For all the times you've gone to KTOO.org or shared a reporter's story on Facebook, make a donation today. Just click the donate button at KTOO.org. And thanks.
Jazz and Classics presents legendary singer and songwriter Arlo Guthrie and family in Juneau, June 29th. Famous for Alice's Restaurant, Arlo's back with Sarah Lee and Abe Guthrie and his regeneration tour with songs of insight and wit at Centennial Hall, 7:30. Tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and jazzandclassics.org. Bring a new generation to the regeneration tour when Arlo Guthrie comes to Juneau, June 29th. Good morning, America.
And it's about 4 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. You've been listening to a Juneau Afternoon this Friday, the 22nd of June. We just heard from Julia Parrish from COAST, which is an organization that looks for coastal observations and surveys seabirds. And they're going to be doing a seabird survey in Gustavus. At the beginning of the hour, we heard from Dan Austin from St. Vincent de Paul telling us about their new thrift shop location. They are moving to the old Valley Auto Parts. We also had a telephonic interview with Heath from the C-SPAN bus, which was just in Juneau and is now in Fairbanks. You can watch the final product of that whirlwind tour on the 21st and 22nd of July on C-SPAN, or whenever you want to in their massive archives of C-SPAN content. And we also heard from Woosh Kinadei, who are having their summer showcase tomorrow night at Rockwell, and you can get tickets for that. That's tomorrow evening at Rockwell. Lots going on this weekend. Again, there's a summer block party over at the Jack tonight with performances and visual art from the Juneau Fine Arts Camp and a beer garden and all sorts of other good fun things going on, as there always are at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. In the interest of full disclosure, I do work there. And of course, the Only Fools Run at Midnight is tomorrow night, a fundraiser for KTOO. And we are, believe it or not, still in the middle of a mini pledge drive wrapping up the fiscal year. So it's a great time to reach out and support public broadcasting in Alaska's capital city. The weather forecast is for partly sunny conditions the rest of this afternoon. And what I'm happiest to tell you is it's going to be mostly sunny tomorrow and pretty decent on Sunday. So thanks again for listening and for supporting public broadcasting. And have a great weekend, and tune in next week for more Juneau Afternoon.